Cool. Hi, everybody. My name's Vaughan Knight. I work at Nokia, and at Nokia I work within the DX team. My job in that is just to help developers be successful on Windows Phone. That's my Twitter handle if you want to heckle, or if you've got any questions after this, if you don't see me around, you can always get in contact with me via Twitter. It's a lot better than email for developer stuff. So the other thing is I run an indie game studio called Bitrave, and that's that Twitter handle if you want to tell us how bad our games are. And that's why I often talk about games, because I can sort of talk about it from both realms. So Bitrave is a company that we sort of created, myself and an artist created it, and all we wanted to do was make fun, casual games. And at the time, I was building a lot of HTML 5 games for companies, and we wanted to build our own, so we started building it, and then the opportunity came up to be part of the release preview for Windows 8, because you could have HTML5 apps on the platform. These are some of the games that we've put together. The two in the middle have been released. Dodo Gogo is the HTML5 game that we released with the release preview, and Jelly Run, which we released in June this year. The other two are Smash Mash Monsters and Anaconda Combo Conga, which is a working title because we've realised no one will ever be able to find it. This is a video for Dodo. So Dodo was written in HTML5. It's all JavaScript. I mean, when I say HTML5, it's really just canvas, audio, video, elements, and just a lot of JavaScript. It's built on a core of ImpactJS, runs at 1920 by 1080. I've ran it even higher than that, and even runs at really wide resolutions like 16 by 3 ratios and things like that. And we've had a lot of success with it, and we didn't expect that because we just released it and we got it out there and it's a casual game. It got a lot of adoption in Brazil. We've been featured in Dell commercials. We've been featured in nearly every store worldwide, which is just because it's just got this sort of general broad audience. The other thing is that from a library perspective, as I said, we use Impact. Impact's a great library. It's commercial. I think it's still commercial, but it's open source. So when you buy it, you get all the source. We modified it heavily. We use 3JS, not because we have any 3D, but because the tweening libraries, the animation libraries in 3JS, actually play really well with Impact. So we didn't have to go and rewrite them. So that's Dodo. One of the issues we found, though, on the development of the project, there's a lot of drawbacks with building apps in HTML. You don't have a lot of efficiency when you're doing draw calls, that is, when you're drawing something to the screen. And when you do something like particles, where you've got hundreds of particles on the screen, if you've got that efficiency, it can be just, say, draw all these particles once, whereas in HTML and Canvas, you have to actually say draw for every particle. And when you're running at 60 frames a second, you've got to call draw for every particle, 60 frames a second. Starts to slow things down. The other thing is that JavaScript doesn't really handle having a lot of objects and iterating that well. People will give you benchmarks and they'll show you how fast it is, but the reality is when you start building real-world apps where there's other things going on around all of that, that you start to get this sort of contention due to the single-threaded nature. Audio management using audio is fantastic because it wasn't there before, but the other problem is you don't really get that fine grain. You can't do looping samples without having a tiny gap. You don't have any control over how long that gap's going to be. Even when you put in certain things to sort of minimise the change in that gap, you still don't have the guaranteed timing. So you can't do looping audio. That's why the music for Dodo is a looping track that fades in and out. Things like that. And tooling. There's not really strong tools for HTML development, game development yet. They'll get there one day, but they're just not there today. So what happened is after we released Dodo, we found out, I was rewriting Dodo in C++ because I wanted to do all the particles and things like that. And then Unity was coming out. And then we decided, we'll redo Dodo in Unity. And then we decided, you know what, we didn't want to redo Dodo in Unity because Dodo already had an audience. Those people were happy. If we changed it, those people would be unhappy. You know, we had 350,000 downloads. We're heading towards 400,000 downloads. But back then it was about 100,000 downloads. So we didn't want to upset that audience. They were happy. So we decided to build another game. Now, this is Unity. We'll be looking at it a bit later. But, it's an IDE, effectively, for building games and for managing assets and managing the pipeline of getting creative from the artist in Illustrator into the game. And before that was a very manual process. He'd send me the art, I'd manipulate it, I'd get it in the right shape and form, I'd get it into a sprite sheet, I'd put it in the game, I'd send him the game, which was great because it was HTML, he could just look at it online in IE. But then on the other end, what was happening was he would then make another change, and that would take a really long time. And as you're getting closer to a release date, you start going, let's not do it, it takes too long. So it's not that it's not worthy of being updated, it's just you don't have time. So we decided to build Jelly Run. Now, Jelly Run started out as a game with a pirate that had no legs, and this was his little minion. The jelly was his minion that ran around doing things for him. And then we realised that that game was terrible, and then we decided to reuse the character in Jelly Run. Here's a video for Jelly. So Jelly Run's built in Unity. It's around about 6-7 months development time in our spare time. We've just started getting featured. It's on Windows Phone and Windows 8. It's also on Android, where we got a lot of cross-platform benefits from being on Unity, because Unity is a very, its main feature is that you can get across platform very easily. But I think the thing that people need to realise is that HTML is a lot less portable than, native code written in the right tools. Again, we took this to PAX. We got a really good feedback at PAX in Melbourne this year, and it's quite interesting seeing the feedback on Jelly versus the feedback on Dodo. They're similar, yet they're also very different. People were just totally in love with the characters in this, whereas with Dodo, it was just a fun time waster. So let's talk about Unity. So Unity is used by the big studios. Rovio use it. They used it for the pigs, not Angry Birds, but the disgruntled pigs or whatever it's called. It's also used by the mini studios. Press Play, they did Max and the Magic Marker. They're now doing the next Max and the Magic Marker, which looks like that. It's a beautiful game. So the smaller teams. And it's also used by the indies, which if any of you are going to develop games, that probably includes you. Indie studios can be 2 people, they can be 5 people, they can still be 10 people. But when you look at games like Temple Run, that's built in Unity, and it was built by husband and wife from their home. So, these games can be built by everyone in this room. You get a lot of things with Unity that you don't get with HTML development. You get pipeline. I can put a Photoshop file into Unity and it immediately pops out the other end and I can see it immediately. So from my artist, he doesn't need to talk to me to get something into the game. He can actually just take the Photoshop file, update it, and then see the results in the game immediately. Tooling, and I guess there's all the tools that you need to manage your game and manipulate your game. You've got performance tuning, which is the screen here, where you can see how much time spent rendering, how much time's been spent on physics, how much time's been spent on, just overhead because of something in your code that it's not aware of. There's an asset store for Unity, so you can actually buy and download assets, just like a store on your phone for apps. You can actually download assets. Some of those are free. Some of them are full games that you can buy for like $20. Some of them are more expensive. Some of them are like $900. So you've got all these options to you. It's good for 3D and it's also good for 2D. Now, I've been using it for 2D, but Unity 4.3, which is about to be released, actually has built-in 2D support and 2D pipeline support rather than using some of the plugins, which is still good, but it's nice to know that they're putting some focus into 2D. And there's a lot more. These are some of the platforms you can port to. Windows Desktop, Windows 8 Store, Windows Phone 8, Xbox, Xbox One, and the list goes on and on and on and on. So let's have a quick look at just, if we're going to build something out of Unity, what's entailed to get it done for the Windows Store. So I'm just going to unplug this audio, which may or may not stretch all the way around. Okay, so when you're building, I'll cut across. We're good? Okay. So here we are in Unity, just to sort of give you an idea. So this is my sort of scene editor, for those that haven't seen Unity. And when I run it up, if I go like that, put it back like that, so I can actually run the game from within in Unity. And the audio is playing at the moment, but I've got it muted just so it doesn't go over the top of me. But there's things that I can do. I can move these buttons around, and down the bottom is actually my game window. That's what the game looks like. And I can then go and change it to say, hey, I'm going to look at the game 16:9, something like that. So that's the example of, Unity gives this ability that while the game is running within Unity, you can go and manipulate it. But one of the things that I want to do is just build. So if I go into build settings, now with Unity, with Windows Phone 8 and Windows Store support, you select Windows Store, Generally, I always use a XAML C# solution. So your code that you write in Unity is generally written in C#. We'll look at that in a second. But that gets compiled down to the runtime for your app. Then what happens is it builds a Visual Studio project using a specific language that then uses that runtime. That runtime won't change between those projects. So I use a C# XAML solution because it's easier to manipulate, it's easier to work with, and I think from my perspective, the libraries that I may want to use within that application are available in C#. So what I'll do is I'll just hit build, and it'll ask me for a folder. So I'll just say version NZ. Actually, I'll change that. Windows 8. Go in the folder, and I'll select that folder. So now this is just building my project. So something else we're going to do in this is also talk all the way down to Azure. I'm just going to show you the flow of getting data from something like Unity all the way down into Azure using native plugins, because the thing about Unity is you can port to everything. Jelly took 3 days to port to Windows Phone 8, and it took 3 days to port from Windows Phone 8 to Android. That's how quick it was. But there was no native integration. So as soon as you start doing native integration, you've obviously got to do porting of that native code. So I'm going to show you how you can do that between Windows 8 and Windows Phone, which is a really easy example. But the principle lies the same for when you're going to other platforms. So what I'm going to do here is just create an instance of a mobile service. I'll just call it Tech Ed Mobile Service. I'm going to use an existing database. And then I'll go in here, type in the secret password, which I just typed in wrong. And that's going to create a mobile service. Meanwhile, if I go back, that's finished building. And over here, you'll notice that there's a folder. Here's our folder. And in here's the Visual Studio project, which is, should be Jelly. So we'll double-click on that, open that in Visual Studio. We'll do a release build. And the other thing we'll do, which is something that Unity is really kind to do, is always defaults to ARM. So we want to make sure that it's running on x86. And it's not happy. And the reason for that being is that this is... So you can write in JavaScript within Unity as well, but it's actually a version of JavaScript called Boo. That library can't exist on Windows 8 because it uses MS Core Lib, so that's why it just includes it by default. They should just not include it. So there's the game starting up. And loading, loading, loading. And what's that? Maybe we skip that. Oh no, hang on. This is what you get for changing code at the last minute. And I'll build that again. Sorry about that, I just removed a library before, so it's complaining that the method doesn't exist. But that would run our project. I don't need to go through that. So that would run the app, and that's just going to run the app under Windows 8. And as you can see, you get debug support for the code that you've actually written in Unity. So that was going across the code that are written in Unity. So what then that means is, so you can build that project and there's no native integration, but what you want to do is you want to be able to go and talk down to Azure Mobile Services libraries. Now, Unity runs using .NET 3.5. It's built using Mono, so it uses Mono. And so the ability to go and reach out to these native platform libraries, you can't do directly from Unity. You need to use the concept of plugins. So once this builds, cool. So that would work, but I'm not going to go show it because we're going to go look at it in a sec anyway. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just add a button. I'm just going to copy that button, give it a name, just call it Tech Ed Button, and I'll move it down. Yep. And we'll move it across as well so we don't get confused. So this button's called Tech Ed Button, and what you can see here is over on the right-hand side, in Unity you have this concept of adding behaviours to objects. So if you were to look at this, there's all these different behaviours associated with this. I'm using 2D Toolkit to do the 2D, so there's 2D sprite, 2D button. There's a thing called a buy button which we want to remove. And we're going to add a component, and there's all my ones from before, but we'll call it NZ Tech Ed Button. And then we go add component. Oops, sorry. New script. We want to make sure it's a C-sharp script. Create and add. And then what we can do is, so this has just created a class. It's just a class within C-sharp. And behind all of this, there's a Visual Studio project. So if I double-click on that, it's going to open the Visual Studio project, which is my what I'm working in. And behaviors have a startup and an update. The update gets called every frame, so then you can do game logic and some physics calculations. Starts where you do some initialization. But what we're going to do here is we're just going to go public void tech ed button, something like that. And we'll just do it debug log breast tech ed, something like that. And then the other thing that's really interesting here is you can just go public string text, for example, and we can actually give it a default value. Oh, fault. Like that. And when we go back to Unity, you'll see this will get compiled in the background by Mono, and it'll turn up here magically. So here text is default. I can change it to be something else. And all of a sudden, I have this behavior that's got my own custom fields, and I can do the initialization from within Unity. And this is the example of tooling. You know, it's not really pipeline, it's tooling. So if we were to run that within Unity, and I click that button, whoops. Oh, hang on. Of course there isn't. Just stop that. So the other thing you've got here is this concept of the button. The button's a 2D toolkit construct, but a lot of them work the same way. And the way that they work is through messages. And so you can send a message to an object, and what that will do is that'll actually invoke a method in one of the components if that method exists. So it goes and figures out that it's on that component, that tech ed component that I created. And then when I run this up this time, and I click on that button, you'll see in the logs, it just starts to log and call that method. So that's pretty straightforward. So the next thing we're going to do is what we want to do is we're going to move that logic into a library. And the reason we're going to do that, because eventually we're going to have a library where we go and invoke Azure Mobile Services. So if I go across to this solution, it doesn't have to be in this solution, but it makes it easy to keep it all in one place. I'm going to add a project. And I'm just going to call it my library, tech ed library. And what it's going to be is a Windows class library. If I go up to properties here, we want to make sure it's .NET 3.5 because Unity runs on Mono. It runs on this, it's got this sort of compliance somewhere between 2, 3.5 and 4. Doesn't really make much sense, but that's sort of where it is. And what we're going to do is we're going to add a class, and we'll just call it Azure Test class add, and we'll put a public method on that. Update. Add to Azure, because we'll add something to Azure later. And what we want to do here is just do that same debug so that we know that we're calling down to the library. But to do that, we need to add a reference to the Unity DLL for the Unity runtime. So what we can do and what we need to do is use the same version. So for those of you who didn't just catch what I did, I've gone across to the one that's my project in Unity, the one that runs behind Unity. And I want to use the same DLL that's there. And the easiest way to find that, rather than trawl through folders, trust me, I've done that before on stage, we'd be here for an hour, is to copy the Unity Engine DLL that's referenced from the other project, because that's exactly the one that we're going to need. So I'll tab back to my project, go browse, get rid of that. Hang on. Go there. And that's the one that we want there, so we'll add that. And now what we can do is we can actually go debug and bring in the Unity Engine version .log from the library. Great. And we'll remove that because we don't need that anymore. Now when we build that, it builds. We can open up the folder, go into bin, release. And here we've got our TechEd library DLL. Now, that's a plugin that we're going to use in Unity. It's a library that we can now use from Unity just the same as we can use any of the .NET libraries or the Unity libraries. And where that ends up going is into the plugins folder. So your project has an assets folder at the root, and then in the plugins folder, this is where it goes. I'll get rid of that one that I've done before, otherwise we'll probably end up with some weird conflict. And what you can do is you can just drag that straight into that folder, and voila. So TechEd libraries in there. And then what we can do is if we go to our TechEd button, scroll down, go to the method, yep, reload everything in that project so it's noticed that there's new dependencies and new classes. And we called it, was it Tech? Hang on, I can't remember what the namespace was. TechEd library dot. Should be there. Let me just check. Sorry, I can't hear you up here. I do this every time. You think I learn. So one of the problems that you actually do get when you work in Unity is things that aren't declared public in Unity are defaulted to public, whereas if you build and then you go across and build a library like I did just then, you'll end up making the same having the same problem, and you'll do it. So I go in there, that's been built. You can't, unfortunately, drag straight over the top. If you do that, it just appends an extra number to the file. So there we go. So that's in there. And then if I go back to here, I should have saved that, yes. TechEd library dot Azure test. So there we've got our so we can go var as equals new Azure test. And then we get Azure dot add to Azure. I did make the method public. So that's going to call that method. So if we go back across here, back to Unity and run. Hang on. It'll get there. That's because I had something else in the project before. Well done, Vaughan. This is all the stuff that I've done before. You get to see a sneak peek preview. And that's now compiled because I get lots of warnings because of my really good code. Hit play. You start to just ignore them because you end up importing libraries that are open source that have like 90 warnings in them. So that's running. And from the library starts logging. So that's logging from our library. Now, when you build this project, you'll be building it, and what will end up happening is within the Windows Store project, you'll end up with this same library running. But when we're running within the Windows Store project, we actually want to start doing some Azure stuff. So the first thing I'm going to do is pretend that this library is our library that's talking to Azure. This will become a stub. So what I can do is, if I cut across to here with our Azure mobile service, we'll pretend that we're going to build the Windows Store app because that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to create the to-do item table because it's a lot easier than manually doing it. Great, thank you for creating it. And then I'm going to download that project. And the reason I'm doing this is that I get a heap of default code. And within this project, within the main XAML, I get access to a lot of default basic code, and some of the things that I get, which saves me having to code them up in here, is this class, the to-do item, which is going to go into Azure Mobile Services. So what I can do is I can go across to my Azure Test library, and we'll be really dirty, and we'll just whack it on top of this class here. There'll be a lot of copy and paste in this. But the reason for that is now that's within that library. That library now has that class. And when we go add to Azure, we probably want to do a to-do item to-do, and then plus, we'll do it. Adding to Azure to-do.text. We'll do something like that. So there's our class there. And then what I'm going to do here, we just built it. Now, you don't have to always just copy and paste like the way I'm doing now. You can set up some build scripts so that it actually copies it across for you, which saves you a lot of pain. Having to copy it every time you update it. Going to the plugins folder. And when I go into the plugins folder, delete the old version. And the reason you want it automated is you don't want to be in this position where you've got this beautiful IDE in Visual Studio, this beautiful IDE which is Unity, which is all about streamlining, and then you have this clunky process in between. You want to be able to make a change, just go make it, hit build, and then come back and know you've got the changes. So, and now this code's not working because we've changed the method signature. So if we go to-do equals new to-do item. Oh, did I not make it public? Oh, don't tell me I did that again. No, that's public. Oh, it's just because it's not imported. And what we'll do here is we'll do something like go, let me think. Text equals this.text. That's that property that we had before. Complete equals false. Oops. And add to Azure to do. Now you're happy. Good. So that's what we're going to do from within Unity. So I go back to Unity. Unity's still running. It's generally a good idea to restart it. It will actually incorporate your changes, but sometimes some of your initialization code won't be happening again. Things happen in a different order, so it can crash. But you can actually, if you're doing it the right way, you can just pull in new behaviors at runtime. And so here, adding to Azure is something else, okay? Because that the something else, the text from something else, was what we'd assigned to the button. So again, the great thing about Unity is I can click over here on the ticket button. I've got that behavior. I can just make it ticket. And then when I go back and click over here, you'll see it's just taking that value from that object. And so that's the object that's actually running, the instance that's actually running. Okay, so what would now happen if I built this project? Because that library didn't exist when I built it before, I need to make sure I added the reference. It's one of the sort of the gotchas with the Unity projects. Once you've built the projects, if you add new libraries, they don't get referenced, so you need to make sure you reference them. But we don't want to do that, because in our built library, in the final library that we're going to build, what we want to do is we want to be using a native library. So that's why I didn't do this before I built before, because I don't have to go and remove it. So if we go across here, we've got our local library, our Unity library. But what we're going to do now is we're going to add a Windows 8 library. So if we go add new project, Windows Store, class library, and we're going to give it a similar name, Tech Ed Library Windows 8. Click OK. And now this is where you close your eyes while I just copy that across. And what that means is that, and the reason I've just copied that across is just so I've got access to the TechEd library. Now, I could add access, could add a reference to the Unity engine. The DLL I would be using there is the one that's in this project, because that's the Windows 8 Unity engine, whereas the other one's the Unity Editor Unity engine. But we don't need to log. You could add it and you could log. But what we're going to do here is we're actually going to call out to Azure Mobile Services. So what we do here, if the network is behaving, because we'll go out to NuGet, search for Azure Mobile Services. There it is there. We're going to install it. Now it's going to be running on our final project, and we want it running inside the Windows 8 library. You'll notice that it didn't suggest we could add it to the other library because Azure Mobile Services doesn't run on the .NET 3.5. So now this is going to go and get all the bits and pieces we need. Now, bear in mind, and I've come across this before, sometimes it actually doesn't pull it in properly to the class, to the class library. I was having this issue yesterday, so I had to go and recreate the class library. I may need to do that today too. But it's just something to keep in mind. So you're just sitting there thinking your code is fine. Sometimes NuGet does a couple of weird things, but generally I find it to be fantastic. But what I did was create a new project and then imported it and checked that it worked. To check that that worked, it did work. We've got Azure. So within this library, so we're down now in the Windows 8 library. I'll close that so we don't get confused. We want to then add this to Azure. And what's great is we've got that mainpage.xaml we had before, but what we want to do is go across to the download, and in the app.xaml, we'll get all the code that we need to sort of set up talk to Azure already done for us. This is where I get confused which version of Visual Studio I'm in. Here we go. So now we have access to a mobile service client, and we just need to add the reference for that. Voila. And so when we actually call add to Azure, we can just access this mobile service client and add the to-do item to Azure. So we can actually go mobile service.get table to-do item dot insert async to-do. Now, because it's insert async, one of the things I probably should say is you do have a wait async when you're using external libraries. So you can have a void, just a public void, blah, in your .NET library. But when you go to your plugin library, what you want to do is you can call it async if you want to do async await. The only thing you can't do is tasks, where you actually have a return value. You still need to do a callback. So it's not too bad, but it's just something to keep in mind if you're going to do a callback. But because we're just going to insert and we don't care about a response, we're just going to leave it the way it is. So this should now go and get that object that we've created in Unity, a part that gets passed through, and then it's going to go and insert it into Azure. Now, another thing to keep in mind is that it's quite complex what's going on here. So Unity, when it goes and compiles, it's going to look for a DLL called TechEd Library. It's going to look for a class called Azure Test in the TechEd Library namespace. And it's going to look for a method add to Azure that takes a to-do item. It's going to look for a class called to-do item from the TechEd Library assembly in the TechEd Library namespace. So that's what's happening at a .NET level. So within Unity, it's happening. It's all there. But when it goes across to Windows 8, it actually gets tricked into thinking this is the same thing. So you will get method doesn't exist exceptions and all that sort of stuff happening if you don't do things properly. And you can have different methods with inside the class, like helper methods that are good for the native stuff. But from an actual Unity perspective, it doesn't know that they're different libraries. So the thing that we need to do to make sure that we know, or that we can trick Unity in thinking they're the same library, we need to make sure default namespace doesn't really matter so much, but the assembly name needs to be the same. Okay. And then we build. Now, even though the assembly names are the same, it doesn't get too confusing. If you're not sure which version's been deployed with your project, you can just go to properties on the library and it'll actually say TechEd Library Windows 8 because we created the project as that. So the description is still the same on the library so you don't get too lost. And then the other thing that we need to do here is we add as a reference that library there. Now, there's another way to handle the deploying of the different libraries. The way I like doing it is having my library alongside my project for that platform. The reason being is that they're so interdependent. When I'm working on games at home, I actually have four monitors. If I was going to have it in a different Visual Studio instance, I can guarantee you I'm getting confused with two now. I sometimes have three or four instances of Visual Studio open. If I need another monitor, my wife will kill me, so I have to do it within the same project. And it just gives you that reference, because when you're debugging this project, it's all within the same Visual Studio instance. So when I debug, I can set breakpoints in that library, and it's very clear to me what's going on. So that's all done. And I think those changes that I put in before to stop the crash, I actually undid, but we'll find out. So now I've gone back to Unity. I've hit build. That's going to copy everything across to that Visual Studio project as it takes its time. Something to bear in mind that if you custom building all your levels, you end up with each level getting built. I've actually excluded a lot from this. Sometimes it takes about 5 minutes. And the signal is the flashing down the bottom of the folder when it gets there. Eventually. How is everybody? Oh, there we go. So now that's built. That's our solution. The solution's already open. We don't need to reopen it. Sometimes you will get a pop-up saying something's changed because you might actually have the project files open or something like that. And now if we run that on the local machine, as I said before, we may get that exception with the store code. But we'll see. Yeah, we did, because I didn't save the changes. I'm just going to get rid of all that. And unfortunately, go back, get that reload, build. So what's interesting there is that is actually opening the same source file that's being accessed from Unity. Something I've sort of found just by mistake, that when it actually crashes, it now then references the original file. So when you actually get an exception, you can actually go and look where in the source the issue was, look at the exception. It used to, what happened was it would just say, hey, there was an exception within the Unity code. So it's fantastic that they've added that by default. You could go and add it in, but it was always really fiddly. You create a new project, you want to experiment with something, you don't want to spend all that time setting it up. It takes longer than just reading through the code again. And done. Soon. Another thing that's just really interesting in Unity is when you're going between platforms like Windows 8 and Windows Phone, you need to be careful of the textures that you're using. I'll show you that in a second, because it's worth looking at. So this should now run and not crash. Okay, great. So here we have our buy button. One of the things that... I'll show you that in a second. But that's Scott Guthrie, by the way. But one of the things we can do is click this buy button. And is that an exception? No. So the first one actually caused a delay, because remember we're not doing the await. So we end up doing things synchronously. So the first one gets a delay as it's setting up. So I've clicked that a bunch of times. And to prove I'm not lying, or to prove I am, we'll go across here. And if we look at the data in that table, you'll see that we have a heap of rows in Azure. So we've gone from looking at code that's managing pixels to putting data in the cloud. So some of the other things that you need to be aware, you've still got access to all the stuff that you can usually do. So if I go and update the insert script to go item.text plus equals plus date.now, save that. And sometimes the Azure instance does die when I alt-tab, but I'll go back. And if we go and browse the data and we scroll down, you'll see that, we've still got access to update the scripts. It's just the same as anything else to do with Azure Mobile Services, but we're calling it all the way from Unity. So that's going from Unity to running native code to do something that's totally relevant to being native. So if you're doing this on iOS and Android, it's just the same. The way that you would go about it is similar, except you would just have a library. It wouldn't be as tightly integrated as in Visual Studio, but you would still have this library that you need to build, that you need to put into Unity. So the next thing we're going to do, fingers crossed, is we're going to go and do this all over again for Windows Phone. So when we go across to Windows Phone, you can build automatically, but what I'm going to do is switch to platform. So switching to a platform takes quite a long time because what it's doing is it's re-importing all of those images and it's updating all the textures. The reason why that was so quick is I used the cache server. The cache server comes with the team license for Unity. It's completely worth it. Sometimes imports were taking 40 minutes and that was just 10 seconds. And what the cache server does is it remembers all the different formats of the images. And to give you an example, if I just search for an asset in the project like sky, there's some sky there somewhere, surely. There's an image. That's from Dodo. For some reason, it's in the Jelly project. So let me find something else. I'll just go Jelly Family. Actually, that's probably an even better example is Atlas Zero. So here's an example of an atlas. An atlas is all the jellies all on one sheet that gets moved around. But you'll see here is that I have a texture type of advanced, and down the bottom, I can actually change the texture for each platform. So for Windows Phone 8, I've overridden the platform and said, don't make the texture bigger than 1024. For Windows Store, I've said, don't make it bigger than 2048. By 2048. The image is actually 4096 by 4096. So I actually downgrade them for each platform. And so that's what's happening when you swap between platforms. It's re-importing all these assets, which are compressed differently and at different sizes. And that's the whole part of pipeline that's amazing. I swap platforms, it does all that for me. I don't have to manipulate it manually in Photoshop. Anyway, so now that we've gone across and done that, we're just going to build. And I don't have the phone connected, which is good. One of the version Techhead Windows Phone 8 2. Oh, hang on. I would need to create that folder. I've already got one there. And done. So now that's going to go and build the Windows Phone 8 version. So it's going to use all those different textures. It's going to compile it down for Windows 8. It's going to create Windows Phone 8. It's going to create a Windows Phone 8 project. And once it's finished building, we'll go and open that. And what we're going to do is we're going to create the native library for that. We don't need to create the stub. We've already created that. We never need to create that again. So as far as Unity in the editor is concerned, we can write all our code against the stub. I've actually written a rudimentary Azure REST API that I use. That's a stub, but it's not the full Azure. It doesn't have authentication or anything like that, but it allows me to test a few things. So that stub can evolve over time to have behaviors, and you can write your tests over your stubs so that if you want to write unit tests, you can, for your integration, you've got those unit tests to handle all the use cases. And everyone's had a good tech head. It's the last bit. Hey, there we go. So when we pop out the other side, we end up with another project. So this is why you end up with multiple projects open. And just to make it really clear, the other project was called Jelly Run, and this project's called Jelly Run. So when you go down here, you'll see that you've got Jelly Run, which is running, Jelly Run running, and Jelly Run. So here we've got our project. There's some things that you might want to be mindful of. If your application uses high memory, you can actually update the manifest to say that this game uses high memory and it won't be available on low memory Windows Phone devices. It's good to test on low memory devices. It's actually important to get on them because there's so many of them out there, especially in the emerging markets. But if you just want to get your game out there early, and with Jelly Run, we wanted to get it out there early, so we've only gone to the 1 gig devices at the moment, but we are going to try and get it down onto the 512s with good performance. So this is our Windows Phone 8 project, but we don't have the Windows Phone 8 native bits. So we're going to add a new project. It's going to be a Windows Phone project because it's the native stuff. It's a class library. And we're going to call it TechEd Library Windows Phone 8. Done everything right there, yep. And what we're going to do here is we're going to delete that. We're going to add a class called Azure Test. And now what we're going to do here is this development technique called copy-paste. And we're going to go across and we're going to find the native one. So that was the one that was used with, get this native one here. Now you don't have to copy-paste, and you could create a common library that they all use that had things like the mobile service client URL and token. The to-do item could be in common code. There's no reason why you can't do that, but for demo purposes, I'm just not doing that. And somehow magically, how did that, it doesn't even have a reference to Azure. Man, it can see the future. Anyway, what we're going to do here, what we're going to do here is comment those out because they shouldn't be building or even telling me what they think they need. And we'll go to NuGet again, and we're going to go and get Azure Mobile Services. And we're going to download the package again because it's an entirely different solution, two projects that we want to put it in. Goes and grabs it. 3, 2, 1, I accept. And success, success, success. We like success. So another thing to mention, the reason I don't have the phone connected at the moment is it still... I created it, did I? Oh, yeah, I did, didn't I? Okay. Yeah, but the thing is it included it, and the reason it included it before is actually because I copied and pasted the code. So, as I said, not really a good practice, but yeah, that was just to show you how bad it is. And so so now we've got this class created, and we need to add a reference in the solution to that library. And because Azure Mobile Services is highly portable on .NET, you know, we now have our project. Now, when you're exporting for Windows Phone 8, there's a few things to know. I don't have the phone connected at the moment, and the reason is that Unity tries to deploy and run on the phone, or tries to actually deploy to the phone. I find that quite annoying because it'd be nice for it to be running out of Visual Studio at least so that I can debug it while it's running. So I usually have the phone locked, and Unity will say, hey, can't deploy to phone, the phone's locked, and it'll crash, but it's actually still created the project. The second thing is, when you're in the project, and if anyone that's worked in development will probably understand how this has happened, but there's the debug project, which is the worst performance. There's your release project, which gives you release performance. But then there's also this other option of having the master. And the master is the only version that you should ever run on the phone because you can still debug and it's the best performance. I've never needed to run debug on the phone for any reason. The other thing that's also good to check is with each version, this can change. Sometimes it defaults to x86 for some reason. At the moment, it's ARM, so that's fine. And what I'm going to do here, and I've got network, is I'm actually just going to deploy it to the phone. Deploying. Phone builds actually take considerably longer. I'm not sure the reason for that, because if you're doing an ARM build for WinRT, it's about the same time. But I think it's just always packaging up the Zap. Your first deployment will take the longest, and after that's pretty quick, unless you have a game that's got like 800 megs worth of data, and that's one of the painful things. It's because the Unity assets all get updated. If they get updated by Unity, so you change a texture slightly, all the assets get updated, they've been changed slightly, and then they all need to get redeployed. But the similar problem happens if you're deploying remotely to WinRT or another Windows 8 device. So, updating information related to optimized files. Getting there. Unlock the phone. And we've deployed, we've succeeded. So if you can't see here, and I can't TV out, but this should boot up. So, for the benefit of all of you, there's the loading screen there. So we haven't changed any code. There's the loading screen there. We've got our buy button in the middle here. I'll tap that a few times. We should go and just to put some proof in the pudding. Go across here. So here we've got 22 rows. I hit buy, 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 buy. Hopefully we've got network access. Otherwise, this is not going to look like a very good demo. It's not a very good demo. You, sir, are a genius. Who was that? Yeah, okay, you get a prize. And again, that's why I tell my wife that's why I need multiple monitors. Thank you very much for that. So the reason that didn't work is we're getting an exception that's being, it gets handled silently. If we were actually deploying the app in debug, what you see, you'll actually start getting some debug code on the screen saying, with all those exceptions, so I would have known. That's the only reason you run debug, because you get to see those exceptions are happening with inside Unity. So if I rebuild that, and hopefully we don't get some weird exception that we've got something deployed twice to the phone. So I'm going to cancel the build and just go deploy. Build, deploy. Okay, so that was pretty quick that time because we didn't change the Unity stuff, we only changed the DLL. And hopefully that's deployed. I might have to delete. Sometimes you find that you need to delete, especially when you end up with two different DLLs with the same class in it, which shouldn't have happened, but it can. Bye, 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 bye. And go across here, hit refresh. There you go. Yeah, you definitely get a prize. So there you go. So what we've done, just you know, within almost an hour, 50 minutes, or 40 minutes really of just coding, even less, 30, 35 minutes of coding, we've taken a project that's been built that's ready to go. We've deployed that to Windows 8. We've run that in Windows 8. We've created some native integration that we want to do. That might be the store. You might want to do some store integration. You might want to do, might not just be Azure Mobile Services. You might want to do Snap integration, which you need to do for your app. It's actually really quick to do. And you can have it so that the code runs within Unity and runs externally. You're not doing if Windows Phone 8 platform or if, you know, if Unity WP8, which you can do, like you can do if defs and have conditional code, but you still need to call through to some native code that's going to execute it. This way, you have all the same code executing within inside Unity, and so it's oblivious to the person that's working in Unity what the behaviors of the external code is. And if you can abstract what store you're on, that's even better. Sometimes you can't do that. For example, try and buy behavior available on Windows Phone, not available on other platforms. So you need to maybe have some conditional code around that, but you should try and abstract it so that you're not actually having if defs in your code. You want to do it in a cleaner way where you've just got full classes, and then that way they just run independently. Okay. So I'm probably going to go over a lot of this. So some of the native capabilities that you might want to use and might have differently is we talked about graphics, you know, 3D and 2D. You can get Unity to handle mapping the different textures to the right texture formats. You know, you need DXT5 for Windows Phone 8, and you want ARGB32 for Windows 8. Music sound effects, so it's also resampling the audio. So if you've got a lot of audio in your game, it actually can downsample it for phone. I find that even with headphones on phone, I get a better performance if I just downsample it a bit. One of the issues I had initially on phone, we just had so many sound effects happening that we actually had to tone it down. Our biggest grind on performance wasn't graphics initially, it was music. And then we hit this thing where we had too many draw calls and we had to sort of tune that. But going to phone from Windows 8 was fantastic because what it's meant is we've tuned the game so well that it actually runs quite well on WinRT, which we're about to sort of release on. And then logic. You might have logic that's different between them, but if you can abstract that into a library, like, you know, get purchase behaviors, true or false, you know, that come back from the library, you can have those libraries handle it so that if try and buy behavior comes to iOS or a platform that you're on, what you can do is you can automatically update that library and your app will behave in the appropriate way. Rather than saying, if that platform now do this, you want to say, if that capability is available, behave this way. So shaders are the logic and the code that run on the graphics card. And we're not going to go into that, but if I look for a material called Jelly, there's got to be a material called Jelly, this Captive Jelly. Oh, whoops. So here I'm looking for a material. That's not a material. Where's a material? Jelly family, are you a material? You're not a material, doesn't matter. But a material is what, you know, the shader runs on materials and materials run in the graphics card. And sometimes they need to be they're platform dependent based on the capabilities of your graphics card. Some audio formats will only work on certain platforms. As I said before, you might have platform-specific logic, and then you've got the native integration through hardware and things that just simply aren't available. There's all these other things that you might have. We've already talked about them, so I'm going to skip over that slide just to keep us moving. There's another way to handle platform specifics within Unity, and that is you've got the plugins folder, and within the plugins folder, if I just screw this out, within the plugins folder, you can have a WP8 and a Metro folder, because it's still called Metro. And within that, you can have your platform-specific libraries. Now, the problem with this is that if you update your library and deploy it into Unity, your native library into Unity, you don't benefit from it in Unity. And to get it into your final project, you then need to build out of Unity to that final project, which is that long process. And then you may need to make sure it's included, and then you need to build your project. Whereas by doing it the other way, where you just have it associated with your platform projects, you actually get to just make a change, update it, build, and away you go. And so that deployment to phone would have taken a lot longer because we would have had to build out of Unity. It would have then seen that all the binaries had been updated, and then it would have had to copy all of them across to phone again. So it's just something to keep in mind. You'll notice that there's an editor one, so that's libraries that I use in the editor and I don't use elsewhere, and there's a Windows Phone 8 one. So you'll end up one with every other platform that you're on if you go to other platforms, where you might have a native library you want to import. So for me, I do some JSON stuff, and I want to make sure I've always got the JSON.NET library for Windows Phone 8, for Windows 8, always included. So I don't, you know, I don't have to go and get it via NuGet. I know it's just there. I'll go back to the slides. So you've got this whole concept of Windows Phone 8, Metro, and everything else with the libraries in there. But for Windows 8 and Windows Phone, because you can be in that Visual Studio project, it makes a lot of sense just to include it there and debug it there. Okay. So as we were just going through there, you've got your plugins where you have your stub. We use all the store stuff. This is the approach we use for all the store stuff, store integration, Snap View integration, and all the other native integration on Windows 8 and Windows Phone. I think when we put the store code in for Windows 8, it took me half an hour or something crazy like that to get it on Windows Phone, and it meant that I tested it for twice as long because I thought I'd done something wrong. It just worked. It was ridiculous. Cross-platform considerations. So these are things that are a bit different to just the technical considerations. Make sure you know your store approval requirements. It can be performance. It can be how much memory is your application using. The WAC test will get run on your application while somebody's actually testing the game. So we were passing more the WAC test, but then when somebody was actually testing it, they were running the WAC test and we were running up to, say, 700 megs of memory. And that's because our textures were just massive. They didn't need to be massive. So we brought them down, brought down the memory consumption, and then we got through the store approval. Automated certification tests as well. Just be careful. In Unity, you might use a library or a plugin from the store that won't actually pass the WAC test. So make sure you're going through the WAC test really early for Windows 8 and Windows Phone. Or do a beta release on Windows Phone. And start packaging early. That's to make sure you're going through those. For me, we use Windows Phone as a way to push out beta releases. So we update it and we test it, and it means that we've got it. We know it gets through store. We know that it performs well. You make a small change, it can have a big impact on performance. Submit an early beta, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and the other thing you can do is you can submit to the Windows 8 store with a manual publish. You don't have to release it, right? You just want to make sure you're getting through those tests. Make sure you know your devices. You've got high memory devices. As I said, we're on high memory. Low memory devices might be important to your target market. Your resolutions. Building on Windows 8 first for us was fantastic because we were catering for every resolution under the sun. All these people complaining about fragmentation of resolutions on Android, it's not a problem if you know what you're doing, if you can handle it, and if you're actually looking to handle it. So if you're on Windows 8, you have to handle it. There's an infinite number of device combinations out there. And so you need to know what resolutions they are. You need to know what graphics capabilities they are, which is what made the port to Windows Phone so quick. because we were all already handling if what happens if the screen was a different resolution or a different aspect ratio. Aspect ratios. Device capabilities. We cater for keyboard input, touch input, controller input, keyboard without mouse, mouse, and keyboard. That's okay. That's all right. You're lucky that's your ringtone. You know, my mindset is to expect everything, but cater to most. You know, I had somebody the other day that wrote a comment on the release of Jelly, and their comment was, error, one star, pink screen. I can't help that person, so I'm not going to bother helping them, unless everyone's saying it. Right, so, you know, everyone else saying five star, that's great. If I know what that problem is, I'll help them. But they're not helping me, so I can't help them. Again, know your markets. We're almost done. Know your users versus your devices. Don't go testing on a device that maybe your demographic isn't on. You know, if it's a general app, like we make general games, we need to get on those low-end devices because we really want to appeal to kids and teenagers. They don't have the top-end devices. They don't have 1020s or 920s or 95s. They've probably got 520s, 625s. So I need to make sure I'm on those devices. Behaviors versus market share. Again, you know, make sure that you know that the people, that the market share of your device, again, it goes back to the previous point, the market share of your device that you need to be on. But are the people on the high market share device your target audience? Do you have a premium photography app that's only really useful on a 1020? Then maybe you don't worry about the market share because you can charge premium on those premium devices. And make sure you implement analytics. We've done this. We know what levels people get stuck on. We know in the most popular level, which is the level that people get stuck on. We have started capturing heat maps of the travel through the levels so we can find where people go way off the map. And we're like, well, how did they get there? And then we can look at what devices they were running. We don't know who they are, so, you know, but that's coming. No, it's not. But it's understanding all these things. Analytics in your apps in general is just so important. And if you actually want to implement it, it's so easy on Windows Phone and Windows 8. You know, it's just a NuGet import. Put one line of code in your app XAML and you're away. You've got analytics for page views, and we sort of trigger it within Unity. And this is what I mean by knowing your demographics. This was downloads on a random period of time. I didn't know we had that many users in China, for example. I thought our core demographics were going to be probably Australia, the US, and maybe Brazil. But I think of that activity, about 3,200 of that activity is in China. So because of analytics, I know my demographic. My demographics in China, where devices like the 520 are a much larger market share than the devices that this is running on. So I'm missing out on all that market share. So I need to make sure that I'm on that platform to go and capture that market share. This is something else that's interesting. As I said, we're on Android and Windows Phone, and we've been on Windows Phone for roughly, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. We've been on Android since early July. That's the activity on Android, including the grey wedge at the top, which is everything else combined, and that's the image. That's the activity on Windows Phone. Something to be aware of. All that activity happened almost within the first month. So on Android, when you're in a new app, you get in the new lists. We're like in the top paid Android apps in Australia. We're like number 22 or something like that, which made me realize just how much little money everyone was making because we weren't making a lot at that point in time. But as soon as we were outside the top list, we've had maybe one or two downloads since. So Android is a really tough platform and you really need to sort of probably spend on marketing, whereas on Windows Phone, I'm able to tell people that there's an app on the platform, it gets some traction, we haven't spent any money on marketing and we're getting a lot of activity. People are a lot more engaged in the app. Because it's a try and buy application on those platforms, I can do it. On Android, it's currently premium, so it's a platform where people don't want to pay. So it's really interesting just seeing the amount of activity. However, probably 3/4 of that's activity in China, which is really interesting. And that's a device breakdown, by the way. Each wedge is a different device. So, you know, there you're probably looking at the Samsungs, and here you're looking at, I think, two variants of a 920, an 820, and a 925s, I think, something like that. So the best places to start, head to unity3d.com, download Unity. Unity Answers is fantastic. It's like Stack Overflow for Unity. It runs on the same engine. Make sure you go to the asset store and download stuff. And start simple. Just build a really simple game. Get it out there and then evolve. Don't start with something complex. You know, if you want to learn how to use Unity, there's a whole conference for that. It's called Unite. If you want to learn how to build games, there's a whole conference for that. It's called GDC. But hopefully you've got something from today to sort of let you know how to get onto those platforms and do the native bits. So thanks for your time, everybody. If you've got any questions, we're probably going to get kicked out of here soon. So I'll take some in here, but I'm happy to take them outside as well. So thanks.